love my intro. It always puts a smile on my face. Well, hi, everybody. I am Beattie Cohn-Vranos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beattie Show. I am a psychotherapist. I'm also a sex therapist, and I'm the author of the groundbreaking book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And I did research with 450 people in the Boston, Providence, and Connecticut area, and I came up with a 10-step formula. I only wish that I had had this 10-step formula when I began my own relationship life many, many years ago. In any case, the formula teaches all of us how to accurately assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. It really changes the way that we look at relationships forever. It educates, it empowers, and above all, it keeps us safe, because we have to look at the reality of what is going on in this country and think about this. Despite all the relationships books and the relationships therapists and love coaches and relationship podcasts, we are continuing as a society to spiral downwards when it comes to finding and maintaining healthy relationships. Just listen to some of the statistics. Every day, 4 women die in the United States as a result of domestic violence. Every year, 1.2 million are forcibly raped by their current or former male partner. What is going on in the world of colleges? Well, 30% of college co-eds report dating abuse. And what about divorce? How are we doing when it comes to marriage? Well, not very well, because the divorce rate for first marriages is 48%. The divorce rate for second marriages is 67%. And people are really, really surprised when we talk about the divorce rate for third marriages. That number skyrockets to 73%. But I have good news, because the Ask Beattie Show happens to be about empowerment in our life, empowerment in our relationship, empowerment in our health, as well as our mental health. So what I have discovered over the past 35 years is that relationships fail basically for 3 reasons. So number one of each of us is not emotionally and psychologically in a good place ourselves. It is really not possible to have a healthy long-term relationship with anyone. So if we all have at different points in our life, skeletons in the closet or unfinished business that really gets in the way of our life and our relationships, it is up to us. It is a personal responsibility that we need to make a decision, that we need to be serious, not just about blaming our parents and blaming the world for all of our troubles, but we need to be serious and willing to really acknowledge and address and resolve as best as we can the issues that continue to get in the way of our lives and our relationships. So number two, what I have found, whether or not you are rich or poor or black or white or Hispanic or Jewish or Christian or Muslim or gay or straight or trans, the majority of people have simply not had the opportunity, or maybe have not taken the opportunity, to really learn the ingredients that go into a healthy long-term relationship or a marriage. So it is incumbent upon us that we have clarity about what ingredients actually do go into a healthy relationship. And of course, number three is my formula. And the formula, as I mentioned, that came about as a result of my research, teaches us exactly how to go about assessing who is right for us and who is wrong for us before committing. Yes, before committing to any serious relationship. And people who know me in my personal life, they probably know that I am one of the most impatient people that you will ever want to meet. Now, professionally, of course, it's a different story. I am extraordinarily patient. But what my research found is that in order to really find out who somebody is and isn't, it is not going to take a week. It is not going to take a month or 2 months. But the research found that it takes close to a year to really, really do an accurate assessment. Because think about this. We spend more time researching cars and grams of fat and real estate and computers and cell phones than we do our partners. In fact, we rarely ever think about assessment. It's not sexy. It's not loving. But think back how often you thought you knew everything there was to know about your partner. You believed that the person you were in love with was exactly who she or he seemed to be. You were sure that you had found your life partner and perfect match. Then suddenly, without warning, you realize that you are headed for disaster. Your relationship is in shambles. Your mind is spinning. What went wrong? Well, the chances are that the signs were there all along. You just didn't know what to look for. So today's show is going to be a presentation that I've given nationally and internationally. The subject, never make a mistake in love again. And I'm really hoping you enjoy the presentation. And I really look forward to getting some feedback. You can email me, you can text me, you can call the Progressive Radio Network, and we can talk about this in future shows. So I wish you love. I wish you healthy relationships. And I really hope that you take in the information, the research that I have gathered over all of these years so that you will be in a situation where you will never make a mistake in love again. So here's Beatty Konvratos and her presentations nationally and internationally, Never Make a Mistake in Love Again. I hope you enjoy. So many of you wanted to join me tonight in talking about what I feel is really the most important issue and subject in our lives, and that is our relationships, our love life, the people who we choose to, you know, hopefully spend our lives with. And the reality is, of course, despite all of the therapists and the self-help books and the coaches and the relationship shows, the fact is that we are doing very, very badly when it comes to our relationships. And I'm going to cite you some depressing statistics, although I want you to know that I have really good news that I want to share with you tonight, of course, about how to never make a mistake in love again. And this is based on my research, my book, and over 35 years of clinical experience, you know, having treated really thousands of men and women here in the United States and also in Canada. I am Canadian. So if we're looking at the divorce statistics, the divorce statistic for first marriages, as many of you probably know, is 48%. And the divorce statistic for second marriages, I mean, we would hope, of course, that we've learned something from our first marriage, but that number goes up, and it goes up a lot to 67%. And what about for third marriages? Well, that statistic is really depressing, and the divorce rate for couples marrying for the third time is 73%. And, you know, I want to tell you a story. I had a call-in counseling radio talk show in Providence, Rhode Island, and I had a man call me, and he said, "Beatie," he said, "I've been married for three times." And I said, "Okay, well, let's hear about what happened to your three marriages." So he told me he was married to a blonde, and then he was married to a redhead, and then he married a brunette. But the reality was, you know, when we started to talk about this, and he actually became a patient of mine, was that he probably should have stayed with the blonde, because the dynamics in those relationships were really identical. And, you know, hopefully he learned something. And, you know, the fact is that we've all made a lot of mistakes. And I really wish that I had known all of the information that I've learned over the years. It would have saved me a lot of trouble and a lot of heartache myself in my own personal life. But, you know, I talk about lessons to be learned, because there is nothing we can do about changing the past. All we can do is learn from our history and find ways and find the skills and find the education. And of course, we're talking about relationships, the relationship education, in order to be able to move forward. And if we're looking at domestic violence as an example, I mean, I don't know whether you're aware, but every single day, four women die in the United States as a result of domestic violence. Every year, 1.2 million women are forcibly raped by their current or former male partner. And teenage dating abuse, I mean, when we were in high school and when we were teenagers, whoever thought about or whoever talked about teenage dating abuse? And unfortunately, this too is a reality, you know, with the kids. And look at what's going on in the colleges. 30% of college co-eds allege that they have been abused by their so-called intimate partner. So these are not happy, happy facts, but this is the reality of what is going on in our society. So we have to look at the culture. So what are really some of the possible explanations for this? And I call it a contemporary calamity. And I think we have to agree, this is really bad news that impacts millions of men and women and children every single day. Well, I think, you know, first of all, there's this mythical belief that love and romance is going to really conquer all adversity. If only it were true. And, you know, secondly, really few role models when we were growing up. I mean, how many people were really lucky and fortunate to have a positive role model for parents to teach us about love and relationships? And if you look at the media, I mean, talk about a false sense of what healthy relationships are, due to misleading and distorted portrayals in movies and reality television and popular music. So the real question is, where do we learn about relationships? I mean, certainly not in schools. I know that in some of the high schools, they have sex education for X number of weeks. But the fact is that unless our educational system really gets serious, unless society really gets serious, and prioritizing relationships, I mean, I don't see that these statistics are going to change at all. In fact, I'll tell you a really interesting story that happened to me when I lived in Sarasota, Florida. I had a private practice. I was, in television and radio. And one day I called my answering service, and who was at the other end of the phone? Well, none other than Governor Jeb Bush. It was like, "Governor Jeb Bush, I'm a progressive, you know, Democrat woman. Why could he possibly be calling me?" Anyways, he was calling me. His daughter was having some problems. And I think one of his aides probably, you know, saw me on television. And he called and appointed me to the Florida State Commission on Marriage, specifically for the purpose of my being able to implement my relationship education program, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes, into the high schools and colleges throughout the state of Florida.
So I was a commissioner for 2 years, and I met with all the major decision makers in social services, in education. I met with everybody that could have really, really given our children an opportunity to learn about healthy relationships early in their life. And the reality was, is that after 2 years, what I discovered is that nobody really cared at all. And, you know, lessons to be learned in the world of politics. And the only people who really expressed any real interest were guidance counselors and teachers who really had, you know, no real say in terms of course implementation in schools, and certainly not in colleges. You know, another thing that I wanted you to know is that many, many people believe that the best way to build stronger families and relationships is to attack the barriers keeping people from achieving their full potential. So issues like poverty and racism and sexism and unemployment and addictions are often cited as the primary reasons for the breakdown of relationships. And although these are clearly contributing factors to marital and family strife, removing these barriers alone will not solve the problem. And how do I know this? Well, because I have treated and continue to treat some of the, in quotes, wealthiest and best educated people in this country. And when it comes to relationship knowledge and relationship skill, all I can tell you in all the years that I've been practicing is that there is absolutely no difference at all between the inner city people that I treated in my days in Montreal and in Toronto, and some of the, you know, the wealthy, powerful people that I have treated over the years here in the United States. So the reality is that we all have a lot to learn when it comes to learning about healthy relationships. So I did research with 450 people in the Boston, Providence, and Connecticut area, which actually culminated in my book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And I discovered that there are three primary things that we all need to do. And the key word, of course, is do, not just think about doing, but doing. If we ever want to have a successful relationship with anyone. So number one, unless each of us is really in a good place emotionally and psychologically and psychiatrically, it is virtually impossible to be able to have a successful relationship. We all need to be willing to deal with our own depression and anxiety and you know, all kinds of issues and trauma and abuse that we have sustained in our life. And as I used to tell my daughter, Jordana, and she's 38 years old, I can hardly believe she's 38, is that the relationship really needs to be the icing on the cake. And we need to be the cake. We need to be solid. We need to really be in a good place ourselves. And then we are able to make good decisions about our relationship. So that's number one. Number two is that we also need to be willing to become students and learn about the ingredients that actually go into successful relationships. And, you know, people ask me all the time, so what are the most important ingredients to go into a successful long-term relationship? And I used to apologize because it's not sexy and it's not fun and it's not romantic. But the reality is that emotional communication and problem solving happen to be the two most important ingredients that will actually make or break relationships. If we can't solve problems, if we can't have real, genuine emotional communication with our partners, you know, the trip to the fancy restaurant or the trip to a fancy destination, that is not going to do it. It is going to do it for the day. It is going to do it for the week. So that when we are looking at, you know, the ingredients that go into a successful relationship, there are many, many, many things that we have to be aware of. And we need to be open to using my formula, which I'm going to be talking about tonight, which again is based on the research and book and clinical experience. And what I discovered in all of this was that it takes, believe it or not, it takes about a year going through the formula to really be able to find out who somebody is and who somebody is not. And in my personal life, I'm probably one of the most impatient people that you will ever, ever want to meet. Of course, professionally, I'm very, very patient. And if there was a way to really fast forward this process, I would have figured this out a long, long time ago. Because the reality is that we spend much more time assessing everything in our lives, our real estate, our lipsticks, our cars, our computers, our cell phones. And we don't think of assessment because it's not a sexy or romantic concept when it comes to our relationships. And yet, without doing a really, really good in-depth assessment, how do we really know who this person is or is not? Because think how often you thought you knew every single thing there was to know about your partner. You believe that the person who you were in love with was exactly, you know, who he or she seemed to be. And you're sure that you found your partner for life. And then suddenly, without warning, you realize that you are headed for disaster. Your relationship is in shambles. Your mind is spinning. What went wrong? And chances are the signs were there all along that you just didn't know what to look for. So what is this 10-step formula really all about? Well, when I see people in my office, I begin with people's family of origin. I want to know what they learned and what they didn't learn about love, about relationships in their family. So you're not going to put somebody on the stand as if they are in a trial situation, but these are some of the things that you really need to find out, because guess what? The acorn really does not fall far from the tree. So you might want to ask, you know, so what was growing up in your family really like? And, you know, somebody might say it was very dysfunctional and my father was an alcoholic or my parents argued a lot or there was abuse of various different kinds. Now, you're not going to throw somebody away because they were unfortunate to grow up in a family, in a dysfunctional family where there were a lot of issues. But what we want to hear something like this, you know, my family life, it was really difficult. It was really, really dysfunctional, but I didn't want to repeat the dynamics of my family life. So you know what I did? I took courses. I went to therapy. I had to deal with my own abuse that I sustained from, let's say, my mother or my father. And I didn't want to repeat my history. Now, having said that, and for those people who know me, I mean, I am a very pragmatic person. It's not what you say, it's what you do. So, of course, you're going to want to, I mean, those words are really important words to hear, but you're going to want to see whether or not those words really match this person's behavior. And of course, the behavior is absolutely key. I mean, we can say all kinds of wonderful things about what we do and what we know, and yet the proof is really in the pudding. So again, family history, you want to know, and you want to know whether or not this person was actually very serious about doing the necessary work. In fact, this morning, perfect example. I saw a woman, an East Hampton woman on Zoom this morning. I can't wait to see her in person for a couple of hours. And we were talking about her family history. She was an abused child, physically, emotionally, and verbally. It was really a terrible, terrible beginning. So guess what happened? Every single man, including her two husbands, where basically they repeated the dynamics that she learned in her own family. And of course that would have happened She had not had therapy prior to starting to work with me. It was familiar. It was, in quotes, kind of comfortable. It was what she was used to. And, you know, I was so really proud of her. And this is a woman who was in her 50s and is in a third relationship, a very, very toxic relationship, which is exactly why she contacted me. You know, she saw that I was going to be speaking here tonight and had the courage, because this is not easy work to do, because she wanted to be sure that the next time around, she was not going to repeat the same dynamics of her parents, of her first marriage, and of her second marriage. And this woman, I think she's probably on the Zoom call. I'm really, really, really proud of her. I'm really proud of actually of all of you for taking the time to want to really learn something about healthy relationships. So number two, what I call skeletons in the closet. Things that are not so obvious initially, things like STDs. I mean, these days we have to be crazy if we are having unprotected sex with anyone. And if somebody's saying, you know, gee, I don't want to use a condom. You know, you really have to wonder about this person's integrity and whether or not this person would really care about you at all. So, you know, this is something we have to do. And, you know, I talk about this all the time, you know, doing what is in our best interest. And a lot of people are not used to doing what is in their best interest. So, you know, I'm the one, you know, for people that I'm treating, constantly asking the question, is this something that's good for you? Is this something that is really going to be something in your best interest? Or is this something that is yet again going to be destructive and self-destructive? So again, when we're talking about skeletons in the closet, verbal, emotional, sexual abuse, physical abuse, substance abuse. So we have to keep our eyes very, very wide open and trust our gut feelings about things. More skeletons, for example, depression, anxiety, and other psychiatric problems, sexual addictions, other lives. You know, I'm currently treating a woman who is married, and prior to her marriage, I mean, she was so in love and just, you know, so excited to be marrying this very rich and powerful man, although she actually is very rich and powerful in her own right. And she actually did not realize that he had another life. And he has had another life. He's had this kind of harem of women during the entire four-year marriage. And, you know, she was somehow hoping that she was going to be able to change him. And one thing I really want to get across, we can't change anybody, okay? We can change nobody at all, only ourselves. So if you go into a relationship thinking you're going to change her, you need to think again. Then we're looking at the area of communication, and communication is not where we're going to go for dinner. I mean, that's fun, you know, or what trip are we going to, you know, decide to go on? Communication really means sitting down and be able to talk about the difficult issues. I'm upset. I'm angry. I'm scared. I really wondered about why you said that. I was uncomfortable when you did A, B, C, or D. To be able to express the full gamut of emotion, the positive emotions, the so-called negative emotions. And in that way, you're really able to see how your partner responds. And if your partner is saying, no, 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 I don't want to talk about this, or I don't want to talk about that, those need to be really red flags that you take in seriously. Because we all have problems in our relationships. There is not such a thing as a perfect relationship. And what happens is that, you know, people want to, you know, avoid conflict, you know, and we don't like conflict because it's not fun and it doesn't feel good. And yet, you know, when I'm doing couples therapy, you know, after the initial couples evaluation, and in my world of therapy, is not 45 or 50 minute sessions. It's not unusual at all in the beginning, if I'm dealing with couples, to be with couples for, you know, 3 or 4, sometimes even 5 consecutive hours, to really, you know, understand what the issues are and to be able to fast forward the process. But people need to be able to sit down with one another. And I ask people to have an agenda. So there may be a his agenda and a her agenda, or if it's a gay couple, you know, their agenda. And we write down every single issue that needs to be, this is another phrase that I always use, acknowledged and addressed and resolved. So what we're looking at and what we all need to be looking at is how well are we able to discuss issues with our partner, issues that are hard, issues that are tough, and are we able to get to a place where there is compromise and where there is trade-off, and we are always, always hoping to get to a place where we have a win-win resolution, not a win-lose, but a win-win resolution. And I know that we're very reluctant to do this because we, you know, we'll say to ourselves, we don't want to spoil the evening. You know, maybe he was just having a bad day, or maybe she was just in a really bad mood. But if we don't deal with issues as they are surfacing, we are putting ourselves at a real, real, real disadvantage. And we need to know, we really need to know whether our partner is willing and capable of effective communication and problem solving. And you know, when I talked about skeletons in the closet too, I'm not suggesting that you throw somebody away because they're depressed or because they may have a bipolar disorder or because they are suffering from anxiety, but we wanna know, what is this person doing? I mean, it is a nightmare to be dealing with someone who is you know, clinically depressed or has a bipolar disorder, who is not in treatment and who is not serious about trying to deal with his or her issues. And I see people nodding their heads, and that's a really, really good thing. So again, it's about, you know, problem solution, lessons to be learned. Then we get to an area of intimacy. Now, it's interesting. I'm treating a young woman from Spain, and it was very difficult for her to say sex. So she talked about intimacy. But when I'm talking about intimacy right now, I'm talking about emotional intimacy. We'll talk about sex in a couple of minutes. Emotional intimacy, caring, sharing, respect, love. Can I help you with the dishes? I know you're having a bad day. What can I do? Is there something that I can do? I know that things have been tough for you. That is what I mean by emotional intimacy. And classic narcissists, by the way, and I have a couple of these situations that I'm dealing with women who are actually married to men who have you know, narcissistic personality disorders. You're not going to be able to get this caring and sharing and emotional intimacy from somebody who is a classic narcissist. A narcissist only cares about himself or herself, okay? That's the only thing. The person only cares about winning. They don't really care about you. It's always about them. And so again, this is something that you need to discover in order to be able to protect yourself emotionally, psychologically, physically, and sexually. And all of these things take time to really play out, which is why my research found that it really does take close to a year. Now, obviously, if you're seeing and experiencing a lot of red flags, you are not gonna stay in this relationship for about a year, because it's already looking pretty clear that you need to extricate as soon as you possibly can in order to save yourself from, you know, from a lot of pain. And then if we're looking at sex, and, you know, sex, I mean, gosh, we live in this highly, highly sexualized society. And, you know, if we were in a live situation right now, I would be asking you the question about how do you think we're doing sexually in this country? Well, the reality is also is that we are not doing all that well. And there was a really important study at Pittsburgh Psychiatric Hospital. And this was with 100 couples who actually, they defined their marriages as either happy or very happy. So at least on the surface, these were not couples who were participating in this study because they were having, in quotes, problems. Of course, one doesn't know on an unconscious level whether they wanted to get into this study because, in fact, they were having problems that they never were able to maybe acknowledge themselves. So what did this study find? We found that 50% of these happy and very happily married women of various different ages had difficulty becoming aroused. 46% of the women had difficulty achieving orgasm. 15% of these women were unable to achieve orgasm under any circumstances at all. 33% of the men experienced problems with premature ejaculation, which, by the way, if there are a lot of men on this Zoom call with issues, it's a very, very, very easy problem to resolve. And 52, and this was a statistic that you may be very surprised to hear, that 52% of men between the ages of 40 to 70 reported problems with erectile dysfunction. And talking about erectile dysfunction, and this is something that I feel so, so, so strongly about, the majority of men who have this issue will go to their doctor, and they will go to maybe a urologist, and typically they are going to walk out with a prescription of Viagra, Cialis, or Levitra. And that absolutely incenses me because what I have seen in my own practice and in my own reading is this is not getting to the root of the problem. The real question is, why is there not sufficient blood flow to the penis? That is the first question that really needs to be asked. And very, very frequently, there are issues with blood flow as a result of heart problems. So, men, if you are on this Zoom call right now, and if this is a problem, it's a really important thing for you to find out why you are having issues with erectile dysfunction. And I'm not suggesting at all that you should not be taking Viagra, Cialis, or Levitra, but that you need to have a much more in-depth conversation with your doctor to find out the root cause of the problem. So when we're talking about sex also, each of us also, just as we are talking about, you know, being in a good relationship, generally speaking, we need to be in a good place emotionally. And if we've had problems with sexual abuse or body dysmorphia or eating disorders, I mean, these are things that we individually really need to take responsibility and that we need to deal with because they will always affect our sex lives. And of course, our relationships must be healthy and satisfying, at least for the majority of women. If we are so angry and we are so upset with our partner, the last thing that we are going to want to do is jump into bed and have sex. Other things that I want you to think about are the sexual side effects with a multitude of prescription and over-the-counter medications, including antidepressants and other psychiatric drugs, high blood pressure medications, some antihistamines, decongestants, beta blockers, cholesterol medications. So again, these are the kinds of conversations that you really need to have with your doctor. And of course, the unwanted sexual side effects from excessive alcohol, pot, cocaine, and physical illness. I mean, these are things that, of course, are going to affect not only desire, but our ability to be able to, you know, I hate the word perform, but be able to really enjoy sex in the way that we would certainly like to enjoy sex. And of course, then there's the hormone issue. And as we age, our hormone levels change. And this is something, too, that we need to be able to discuss with our doctors. And of course, I'm an advocate for, you know, using as much natural, you know, remedy, you know, as possible. But there are certainly times when we need to, you know, use prescription medication. So the other thing too, you know, recognizing that, of course, work and children and money problems, all of these things are going to be impacting not only our relationship, but our sex lives as well. So again, it is about, are we committed to ourselves and are we committed to our relationships to be willing to acknowledge, address, and resolve as best as we can all of these things that are getting in the way of our lives and of our relationships. The other thing when we are assessing our partner is what I've called old baggage and the high prices of ex. Things like alimony and child support and exes, and do I want to be a step-parent? And what happens of his or her children that they can't stand me? And do I want to be in a situation where the exes and the stepchildren are really a priority in my partner's life? So there are so many things that have to be looked at, especially, you know, as we get older, people are marrying for the second and third time, and there are children, and there are exes, and there are a lot of skeletons in the closet from past relationships. So these are the kinds of things that we all have to think about, as unromantic as they all are, in making decisions whether or not we really want to move forward with our relationship. Things like also, you know, goals and values and lifestyle and money and children and sex and hopes and dreams and religion and parenting and politics and jobs and friends and location, where do we want to live? So there are so many things that we actually need to explore, so many important conversations that we need to have with our partner. And if something doesn't feel right, we should not be denying and we should not be suppressing and we should not be avoiding to talk about these things, because the more we don't deal, the greater the possibilities that we are going to end up in a situation that is not in our best interest. I would rather know that, no, this is not something that is going to work long, you know, long term, because his children hate me and he's not really going to be supportive of my parenting. So I want to know this now, rather than spend 10 years in a relationship or in a marriage where, you know, I've wasted a lot of time, I've experienced a lot of heartache. So again, it's about looking at the truth and looking at the reality of what is really there. Now, having said all of this, I mean, we all know that the perfect partner does not exist. There is nobody perfect. I don't believe in this soulmate and she's my soulmate and he's my soulmate. I mean, it's all very cute. But, the fact is that, you know, we're not perfect. Nobody's perfect. But there are three questions. And these are probably the most important three questions that you need to ask yourself after you go through this process. So question number one is what I want and need in a relationship. And I really suggest and encourage people to write all of this out. What do I really, really want and need? And not just superficial things. I want a great house on the beach. I mean, that's great and that's fun and that's wonderful. But trust me, that is not going to do it long term if we're looking at healthy relationships. So what I want and need in a relationship. The second question, a very important question that you want to ask, is what I don't want and need. What do I really not want and need? And the third question is describe my relationship. Describe the reality of my relationship, the good, the bad, the ugly, the ambivalence. You know, really dig deep into yourself and look at the truth and look at the truth of this relationship. Then, here's the fun part, and here's where, you have to be really honest with yourself. What compromises am I willing to make, okay? We're never, ever, ever going to get everything that we want, ever. Not from anyone, probably never from ourselves. So what kinds of compromises am I willing to make to be in this relationship, okay? However, there are certain compromises that we should never, ever, ever make under any circumstances at all. And what are they? Well, emotional communication and problem solving. If we don't have really great communication and problem solving, you are really headed for a very, very unhappy situation in your life with your partner. Lack of emotional intimacy, if there isn't the caring, the sharing, and the respect, and the understanding, and I love you, and can I help you, and what can I do to make your life better, and that it's not just all about me. If that is not there, the emotional intimacy, again, this is something that is, in my view, absolutely not to be compromised on. The sex. Now, there are people, when I lived in Sarasota, I had a lot of older patients that I was treating. And I was telling a story actually yesterday on my SBD radio show. We were talking about sex and older people. And I remember I had a couple of women who were in their late 80s. And let me tell you, they had better and more frequent sex lives than many of the younger women that I was treating in their 40s and 50s. And I used to say to them, I want to be you when I'm 80, 90 years old. So again, the priority that you place on sex, I mean, only you know. I mean, for some people, it is really important. And for some people, it's like, you know, the companionship is enough. So again, it's about really knowing yourself, being honest with yourself, and being honest about the reality of your situation. Other things that we should never, ever, ever compromise on is abuse of any kind. And that includes verbal, emotional, physical, sexual abuse, and I'm going to add substance abuse, behaviors that make you feel unsafe or uncomfortable, okay? And only you know, but don't fool yourself. Don't fool yourself and believe that you're going to change the alcoholic. And don't fool yourself. You know, I had a woman that I had treated a number of years ago. And they would go away on their yacht once a year to the Caribbean. And he would drink too much, and she would drink too much, and he would hit her. And she came in to see me, and she was suffering from depression, and she had some questions about her marriage. They had apparently, you know, a great lifestyle. And she said she loved him very much. And I remember she came in, and she said, "Beatty, but, you know, he only hits me once a year." I said, "He only hits you once a year? I mean, you got to be kidding. That's terrible." And in looking at this beautiful, and she was beautiful inside and out, and looking at this woman's history, what I learned was that she was hit every single day as a child. She grew up in a very, very physically and actually sexually abusive relationship with her father. So she hadn't processed up to this point that once a year, he hits me once a year was absolutely not okay. So I said, "Look, you know, we're going to bring him in." And she said, "Yes, we are going to bring him in." And she got to a point in her life and she said to him, and I will never forget this conversation. She says, "If this happens again, if this ever happens, I don't care whether you've had too much to drink or I've had too much to drink, this marriage will be over." And he hurt her. And this was a man, this is also a couple in Sarasota, I mean, nobody would ever confront this particular man in this way. And I remember seeing them at an event a number of years later, and she looked at me and she said, "It's okay, you know, it's okay." So as you can see, I mean, there are a lot of things that we really have to look at when we are assessing who is right for us and who is wrong for us. And again, let's not fool ourselves. We cannot discover this reality in 2 weeks or in 2 months or even in 6 months. And you know, when I talked about, you know, the about a year that we really need to take to find out who someone is and isn't, I mean, that has been the consistent finding that I have seen from, you know, from people who have used, you know, my formula. The book has been out for many, many years and a number, you know, of different, you know, updated editions. And that's basically what people are telling me. So it really does, it really is the same finding that I found when I was doing my own research. So I think, you know, what would be really good at this time, I don't know how we're going to work this, but I would love to take some of your questions. I would love to hear what you actually think and feel about my Never Make a Mistake in Love Again, the presentation and the formula and my philosophy of trying to teach people how to keep themselves safe and to avoid the destructive and potentially self-destructive relationships that so many people are finding themselves in.
If anybody has any questions, feel free to type them in the chat, or if you'd like to use the raise hand feature, or if you just would like to unmute, the mics are open, and we're open for Q&A.
Curious, you know, when I give these presentations, you know, does it resonate? Does this make sense? Or does it sound like just some psychobabble, you know, by some psychotherapist and sex therapist?
I think it makes perfectly good sense. I married a sociopath. Ah. And I was the ATM machine. I found out so many things. Even though I dated him for a year, it didn't become apparent until after we were married. He gave up working. I worked three jobs to keep us afloat and liquidated my stocks. Uh-huh. And of course, he ended up calling me at work and saying he was leaving me close to our 7 year because he had somebody else pregnant.
Oh my, how painful for you. How awful.
And then when I was working two jobs to support us because he just didn't feel that he should work or contribute or support me. He just cleared out everything that I had earned. And I always worked two jobs from the time I was 18. He cleared out everything. And I'm not perfect, but I'm a very nice person, a very giving person. I didn't find out I was divorced till 3 months later. He went to another county and, I mean, it was all this deceit, and it's really hard to get over that.
Tell me, do you feel, I mean, you've listened to the entire presentation. Do you feel that these were just signs that you missed? Do you feel that you were really needy and wanting to have a relationship and that you overlooked a lot of things in retrospect? Of course, we're all so brilliant. Or were these patterns of behavior that he exhibited, were they things that were really familiar to you, given your own history and perhaps your own family background?
Well, this is a conversation that's coming up, and it's just hitting me. I even watched a TED Talk this morning. I think there were red flags.
Yes.
And maybe I was just afraid of him coming yes. back to me. Everybody thought he was going to kill me.
Okay. So you were in danger. You were in danger. Yes.
Yes.
And thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing. And, you know, when I give these talks and you know, when I do my shows, it's all about trying to educate and empower people, because we none of us really knew any of this. I certainly didn't. You know, when I began my own relationship and dating life, and I came from a very stable Orthodox Jewish Canadian family.
Right.
So think about how little I knew, how really, really little I knew.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So lessons I came from a rich background.
Right.
So,
lessons to be learned. Lessons to be learned, right?
And a lovely family.
Yes. Yes. Now, I have something here, let's see, from Max. Okay, it's always so great to hear from men. Max says, wish I'd heard this talk before I spent 16 years with an alcoholic. He died 1 month before his 57th birthday of hypothermia behind a supermarket on Thanksgiving Day, 2008. Yes, I wish we had all heard this talk years and years ago in our dating lives. Sarah says, love everything you said. Thank you so much. I'm wondering if you have any advice for those who are in relationships that are unhealthy and how to find the confidence to get out. Well, if you need that push, I mean, finding a good therapist, and let me just say that, you know, all therapists are not the same, all doctors are not the same. If you need that extra support, you know, reaching out and asking for help, you know, one of the things when I talk on my Ask Beauty show on the Progressive Radio Network, it actually airs every Monday from 3 to 4 Eastern Standard Time if you want to, you know, hear the shows. I talk about how we don't need to navigate this life on our own. It is way too hard. And that it's fine. We have coaches, we have friends, we have families, and that we should be able to use good resources in our lives to help us with our bodies, to help us with our mental health. And so again, you don't need to do this on your own. And getting a little bit of extra help doesn't mean you're going to be in therapy for 1,000 years or anything like that. But taking that first step is obviously something that is really in your best interest. So I support that. Just do it. Just like the Nike logo, just do it. Just do it. Jane, thank you very much for this session. I think you are spot on. Thank you, Jane, for those lovely, lovely comments.
It's hard to find anyone to share your life.
It's challenging, but you have to put yourself out there. You're not going to find anybody just sitting in your own house or in your own little apartment. You have to be willing to risk. And of course, there are no guarantees. And years ago, you know, before dating sites, I mean, 80% of people now are meeting on dating sites. So whether or not it is on dating sites or in synagogues or churches or lectures or events or even meeting somebody on the street. I mean, I know we have to be very careful in these times. I think it's willing to take some risk, never knowing exactly whether it's going to be risk return. And then if you are finding somebody that you would like to get to know, really using the formula so that you're never going to make a mistake in love again. I mean, people are meeting other people all the time. You know, I read the Vow Session in the New York Times every Sunday. People are getting married. Love is alive and well.
But I happen to be the poster child for success. After an abusive 35-year-old relationship / marriage, and having experience online and meeting a man locally, which I thought was the right thing to do, and then he died, I wound up picking myself out of the ashes, and I actually went back on, and I actually wrote a novel about online dating, and actually it was about later in life transformation. And it really is about transforming your life and having hope and having an understanding that we're all really good, decent people, and that being with people is what life is all about. So to have the courageousness, no expectations, get out there. No one is going to ring your doorbell except Amazon Prime and UPS.
You're right.
And friendship is where it's all about. And getting dressed is where it's all about. And going out and meeting new people where it's all about. But to have the unreasonable expectations, which I had, and I wrote about it in my book, which was a novel, which was the first day I was going to fall in love and be cured and be rescued. That was it. And you know what? I bounced hard a lot. And it taught me about myself and friendships and women and work and hobbies and life and wanting to have the energy of a man around you is what life is all about. And I applaud anyone that gets out there and decides to enjoy life. End of story.
Right. Thank you so much. I'll see you very soon. And let me just say something about that. You know, for a lot of people, being in a relationship is something that's absolutely critical. But if you're one of these people who does not want and need to be in a relationship and you are contented with your life, then so be it. That's okay. There are a lot of people who are happy with their friends, they're happy with their work, their jobs, you know, their extracurricular activities. But the fact is that if you're really wanting to have a successful relationship, you know, just like you were saying, Bobby, is that we have to be in a good place ourselves. If we're looking and we're needy and we're hoping that somebody is going to rescue us, we're not able to really look at the reality of who we think we're really madly in love with. And we put ourselves at a lot of risk. And again, I mean, these statistics that I talked about at the beginning, they're very, very worrisome when we're talking about teenage dating abuse and 30% of college co-eds that are alleging abuse and the terrible, terrible divorce statistics. So we have to be very careful. We have to be very mindful. But, you know, love is still alive and love is well. And if you're wanting to go out and find somebody, I think, you know, as you say, Bobby, I think you just have to put yourself out there. But we have to be mindful and we have to be careful who we allow into our lives. And
not to fall victim of past habits.
Exactly. And if you're needing extra support in order to navigate this new chapter in life, again, to give yourself permission and reach out and get the best possible support that you can possibly find.
Thank you, Edie, for being able to do this presentation for us. It was very, very informative and highly appreciated. And we look forward to any follow-up materials that may be coming out shortly, and we hope to do this again, perhaps maybe in person at the East Hampton Library in a little while.
Absolutely. I'm in, Stephen.
Thank you, everyone, for zooming in this evening. And